Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Nightlight. Step away from the mainstream and gather around as we enlighten the world and our realities and travel this cosmic journey we call life. Join us as we share with you and provide that beacon that can guide us all to a better way. Explore with us as we examine a metaphysical montage of spiritual insights, covering everything from the mundane to the magical, UFOs to unicorns, and everything in between. This is a time of awakening, of sharing and evolving, of spreading our wings and soaring on the cosmic breath of creation. Come and join with other light-minded spirits as we weave our lights together to seek understanding, enlightenment, and with a little luck, some wisdom. This is Nightlight, a reminder that you are never alone.
Welcome to Nightlight, everybody. So good to have you visiting with us again. It's always a pleasure when I get to share my friends with my friends and information with other people and insight and excitement. It really is a special time for me to be able to get out on the airwaves and let people know what's going on and the fascinating people that I have met and convinced to come onto the show. First, I do want to thank Ken Quiet Hawk for his amazing intro. As always, I suggest everyone to please check out his website. He's a native storyteller, and native storytellers not only have good stories to tell, but it's their way of putting history out in front of us in forms and ways that will remember it and preserve it. Much better than the textbooks that we've been using lately, especially since they haven't been updated since Christopher Columbus almost discovered the United States. But I digress. Check him out on the internet. He and his wife are amazing native storytellers, and their CDs are phenomenal and fabulous to listen to. I have with me again tonight Mary Joyce, who is one of my favorite people to talk to because she never lets me down in having a ton of wonderful material. She is, among other things, a gifted author, and she's written books that are outrageously amazing on Christ, on Bigfoot, on the little people. And all of them are well worth reading. They all are beautifully, beautifully illustrated, and they give you information that was probably inspired by her website, but she has gone much further into them. And I highly recommend you check out her books, because especially the Bigfoot one, if you're only going to buy one, that's the one you buy, because when I read it, I cried. It was so beautifully done. The other thing she does that is profound and a gift to all of humanity, and I seriously mean that, she is the editor of skyshipsovercashiers.com, which is one of the best websites out there ever. She researches articles. She researches information. She puts her documentation out there. She puts graphics out there. She writes short little vignettes, I guess is the best way to put it, on the material. And she gives you enough so that you are almost driven to research it yourself and go beyond what she's put there. not only is the website phenomenal in that there are 20 or 30 articles there, she has archives that go back over a decade, so that not only can you see what is currently on her plate, but you can see what she's been into over, you know, she's not old by any means, but the archives go back in history. They go back further than she or I do, probably, but her research into them doesn't. She is phenomenal. She documents. She doesn't put anything up there that she hasn't been able to prove, which is rare. And she gives you insightful information and doesn't tell you what to think, but gives you material so that you can form your own opinions, which I think is a gift and a talent that many people just don't have. So do check out skyshipsovercashiers.com, but don't do it till after the show, please. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Mary.
Hi, how you doing tonight?
Doing well, doing very well, actually.
Good. That was a very, very nice introduction. Thank you so much. And thank you for mentioning the book, the Bigfoot book. And I do want to do a follow-up on that that has nothing to do with the book, but everything to do with the Bigfoot. And one of the top stories on the homepage is simply listed as legislator wants Bigfoot hunting season. And this is for real. There's a Oklahoma state representative, Justin Humphrey, and he wants to actually establish an official Bigfoot hunting season, and he would like to have a bounty of at least $25,000 for the first person to trap a Bigfoot. And I just find this reprehensible because, as you and I have talked about before, there is so much evidence that this is just not an ordinary animal. Dr. Melba Ketchum, a number of years ago, discovered that the Bigfoot is half human as far as the DNA is concerned. The other half is some unknown primate. So I just kind of lightly say that there really are distant cousins and we shouldn't be shooting them. And your wonderful storyteller at the beginning of your intro talks about the Native Americans. And they have regarded the Bigfoot as another clan of people. And so you wouldn't want to go in shooting another clan of people. And so, and they've also, the Bigfoot have also done wonderful things, like they've actually saved human beings. They try to avoid most of us because we aren't all the most wonderful creatures in the world. But they have wonderful qualities, and they just shouldn't be shot by somebody for the joy of it. And this particular gentleman, I don't know if I can remember what he said, but, establishing an actual hunting season and issuing licenses for people who want to hunt Bigfoot will just draw more people to our already beautiful part of the state. And this is the best sentence. It will be a great way for people to enjoy our area and have some fun. So let's go shoot some Bigfoot. If other people that I might be listening to your show feel the same way, in that article I actually give some of the top legislators in Oklahoma with their phone numbers, so you can call and actually leave a little message about this. So that is a spinoff from a subject that you and I have talked about before, but never about this Bigfoot hunting season, which I hope does not happen.
Well, you know, when you stop and think about it, to my knowledge, I mean, I have not heard of Bigfoot. I mean, they haven't hurt anybody. They've thrown rocks at people for sure. But when you stop to think about it, they haven't hurt us because possibly we are too primitive. I mean, when you look at the evolution thing, it feels to me as though their society is more cultured and more gentle than ours. And so therefore, the thought of getting out there and trying to shoot one or kill one is just bizarre. I mean, they're intelligent. Why would you... Go ahead.
Well, any of the horror stories almost always involve hunters who are shooting at them, or you know, people who are just in, I don't know, even going after them, like with some of these hunting shows, let's hunt down Bigfoot type of programs. You know, they just don't want them invading their space. And when they're known for throwing rocks at people, but they don't hit the people. All they're doing with their sounds and their rocks is to try to scare people away. And the volume they're able to create with their voices are, you know, certainly enough to scare most people away. But it's very, very rare that you hear something where they've been just out of the blue, violent to human beings.
Well, yeah, and yeah, they have families, so they have communities, and it feels to me as though basically we're invading their territory, they're not invading ours, and there's no respect. I mean, why can't we just leave them alone? I mean, they don't want to infringe upon us. They really don't seem to want to communicate with us, except for people who are possibly sensitive enough so that they are isolated enough so that there is a gentleness and a tenderness about them, and then they do communicate to a certain extent. But this is ridiculous. This is obscene. This is bloodthirsty. I'm all for people having guns. I think it's the right of every person to have a gun if they want one. But to go out and
In that posting, I've included a photo of Justin Humphrey, and he's got the cowboy hat on, and he's got the Western tie, you know, where it looks like a silver medallion with a string. I guess it's a Western string tie. And, you know, the image is kind of fits his attitude.
And he's got a picture of the rifle with a telescope on it. That's not even sportsmanlike, for Pete's sakes. I mean,
that's correct.
I am not into hunting animals of any sort.
I think people
that
have the hunting instinct could accomplish so much with a camera, because the joy of if they have that kind of joy, the joy in tracking the animal and getting a photo should be an alternative to trying to kill them.
Although there are some pests that I don't mind, you know, sending on to the next incarnation.
That's different. If you've got, animals that are killing your livestock and you know, you can kind of understand why perhaps farmers have the right to do that. But we're not talking about a creature that has such human qualities. On the good side, not our bad side, because we've been showing a whole lot of our bad side lately as human beings.
Yes. No, it blows my mind, and I want to bring up your Bigfoot book again, you know, because this is not an author pushing her book. This is someone who has read the book and decides that it's well worth pushing, and I don't get kickback either. The book is so well written, and it shows you the human, the tender side of these creatures, and it talks of them and their children. It shows families. It shows them helping people. I mean, it just is so heart-wrenching to think that you know, there are people out there trying to trap them, I understand wanting to get to know them, but, you know, unless they want to get to know you, it's not going to happen. And so all of this is just, it will drive them further and further into the backwoods where probably they should be, because it's safer there. Not because I want to isolate them, but because I want them to be safe. This is horrible. And the fact that, you know, they want... put a bounty on somebody's head. I mean, you know, I don't know who it was, the Russians, I think, or somebody put a bounty on the heads of American soldiers and things like that.
It was the Russians.
You know, it was, okay. But this is awful. We're not fighting over anything. We are sharing territory. So there's no reason for this. I mean, other than, you know, sooner or later it's going to happen that somebody is going to, you know, he's saying trap. If he says trap, he isn't saying kill. But
it's two different things.
Is it?
It's Bigfoot hunting season, plus he's offering a bounty if somebody traps one.
Ugh. Well, I think it's terrible.
I sincerely hope that people who share our point of view on this will go to the website, Skyships Over Cashers. On the right-hand side of the homepage, we list, the 20 most recent stories, and it's listed there. It's like 1, 2, 3. It's like third from the top right now. So you just click on that, and the story will open, and you'll have phone numbers. You're not going to get a real person. You're going to get an answering machine. But they pay attention to the messages. So just think real clearly what you want to say. Be real to the point and just leave your message.
Mm. Well, I hope that people do that because this is, you know, in a world where so much is going crazy and there's so much upheaval everywhere and there's so much confusion, to do something like this is disgusting. I mean,
For those people who are listening to the show who may not have heard you and I talk about this before, I'd like to just share one example of a story from the book that's real, and it gives you an idea of the positive human side of the Bigfoot. And there is a woman who lives in South Carolina. She has, you know, a number of acres of land that's wild land, and she had a Shetland pony, and it was always getting out. She put an electrical fence around it. She, you know, did everything, and she finally resorted to getting a 250-foot boat rope so when she would go to bed at night, he wouldn't escape and disappear. Well, it didn't matter what she did, even with the rope, even with the fence. Every morning she'd get up and the pony was gone. And she eventually found it every time. It was off in the woods. Its water bucket and its feed bucket had been dragged out there where he was. And what really cinched it was one day she discovered little handprints and a muddy butt print on the pony. And the Bigfoot were giving their children rides on the pony.
Oh, that is so
And the
cool.
pony apparently was very cooperative.
Oh, that is so cool.
I just think that's just kind of sweet.
It is sweet. And there are stories of Bigfoots saving soldiers' lives.
Every story that I have in the book... And they all have photos or illustrations or something to go with every story. Every one of them is something current or contemporary, except for one. And it's a great story from the Civil War. It was written in old paper with the old style writing and the old style ink. And it was like a diary of the war experience that this soldier wrote for his family, like just a, I don't know, as a family hand-me-down. And he was almost mortally wounded during one of the battles of the Civil War. There's a whole lot to the story. I'm not going to get into it all, but he looked up when he thought he was dying, and there were two big legs there that he described like hairy tree trunks. They did not have the term Sasquatch or Bigfoot at that time, and so he called them the forest people, and they took him to an underground cave, and he goes into great detail about how they saved him. And so that's the only really historic picture or story that I have in the book. And it's, like I said, probably longer than any of the other chapters, but it's well worth reading.
Absolutely, absolutely. And like I said, some of the stuff that you wrote about in there, I sat with tears dripping down my face because there is a sweetness to them about sharing gifts, and the material is just it's heart wrenching. It's so beautiful. So, and your other books are good too. Don't get me wrong.
But it's clearly this is the one you like the best. I got you.
Yeah.
But though I don't think you'd be one that would really be that interested in underground secret military bases. That's one of the other ones, and I just don't see how that would be at the top of your list. It would be at the top of some people.
It's not at the top of my list, but I did read it, and I did, you know, I have it. And The Little People as well. Actually, The Little People were fascinating because you talk about where this group that you that you were looking at and into were, because their passageways and everything were found at a school that was under construction. And so fascinated was I that I Googled it, and I find that there are huge places here in Tennessee where there have been bodies of the little people found. So I'm in little people territory here. So it's
at
really
one
very
time,
exciting.
At one time, there must have been a whole bunch of them throughout the southern Appalachian Mountains.
Yeah, I would say so. One of the other articles that you wrote also for this month was about a remarkable lady named Mary Hall who had a stroke. And usually when people have strokes, you know, it slows them down. And, you know, it compromises them sometimes. But though she is slightly compromised, she hasn't let it stop her. And she has become an amazing computer detective on the computer about undersea discoveries. And I am so impressed by this lady that even though she's compromised, she's actually found three undersea discoveries of ancient ruins that may well be pre-flood. And you have the pictures of them up on your website so that they can be seen, and you can see the sites. You can see, you know, where she has found things. I'm wondering about one of them, though, if possibly it could be a site of an asteroid hit of some sort.
You mean the very first one that she has there?
I
wouldn't think so, because when you look, what you're describing is something that's 60 miles in diameter, and it looks like a perfect circle, but there are many shapes within it. If it had been hit like with an asteroid or like a blast, you wouldn't have these different heights within the circle. So it looks more like a circle of, let's say if it's a civilization, it would be building structures within an outer circle of perhaps of protection. But it does not have the fingerprint of an asteroid hitting the Earth, other than the fact it's round.
The Norse people.
And again, if an asteroid were to hit it, it probably would have more of a jagged circle effect, and this one doesn't.
Yeah.
It's more sharp edge. The last time you and I spoke on the program, I really, really spent a lot of time talking about using Google Earth as a detective tool and how you can find many things. And I shared stories of things I've found that are clearly ancient off the coast of California, and we elaborated on four of them. It was after that I was contacted by this lady's caretaker, and between he and I, we were able to get these three different sites that she had found. So that was the result of the conversation that you and I had. And the reason I think it's important to bring it up again is because people need hope. And even though she can't talk well enough that I can talk to her on the phone. But her mind still works. She spends most of her time in bed, but she's constantly using, I believe it's two computers. So not only does she monitor things using Google Earth, which I think is a wonderful, wonderful tool, She also monitors the International Space Station and a whole lot of other things. And she just searches for these different anomalies. And she has a, I don't think, there's a YouTube channel that I guess posts many of her things. I'll say it, if somebody doesn't have a pencil, it's probably not going to be something easy to remember. But the YouTube channel would be like Mr., capital M and small r, and the rest of the letters are capital. So it's Mr. MBB and then 333. And I'll say it one more time. It's M, small r, then uppercase MBB and 333. And so she has an outlet where she's able to share what she finds. And now she has another outlet that if she finds something else of interest, we certainly would be open to posting it. So everybody can become a detective, even if you're handicapped.
Oh, geez, yeah. I mean, well, you know, very often handicaps give you the opportunity to experience gifts that you hadn't utilized before. And she has a sensitivity for sure because, and I love that she found things off the coast of Antarctica. I mean, that, and
now,
these
those are really remarkable because they really look like the foundations that you would see for pyramid structures in South America. It's like, it looks like maybe the top part was lopped off, but they clearly have geometric shape to them.
Absolutely. And then things off the Barrier Reef in Australia. Again, she's finding, and when you look at these structures, I mean, it took somebody with amazing perception to be able to see the outline of what obviously are structures, and yet she must have gone over these so very slowly that she was able to catch that they looked like structures. Because,
right.
You know, a lot of times when you see stuff like this, it doesn't register that these are structures. And the ones that were off the Barrier Reef in Australia, I mean, those are so clearly structures. It's you can't possibly dismiss them. And what I love is you have given the latitude and longitude of all of these things that she found so that people can actually plug this into Google Earth and go see them yourself.
And I do that on purpose because there are so many people that put things out there and they play games with Photoshop, and we've reached a point where, you know, we wonder, is anything true? So I give people the coordinates so they can go and see it for themselves. I think that's really important. It's Google Earth is very particular. You have to use the little degree marks and stuff just the way they do it. So when you look at articles like this, it's best to copy and paste the coordinates into the Google Earth search bar. And then you won't, if you get the little degree mark wrong or something very simple, you won't find anything.
Yeah, I've done that.
Good thing about Google is you have like a tool. And on each of these in her, in the article about her, you'll find a yellow line, and that's a measuring line, and I tell you how we're able to tell you how long things are, or how wide or whatever, because otherwise you can't begin to visualize how big these things really are. The latest thing that you mentioned, the one off of Australia with the Great Barrier Reef, that is almost 14 miles wide. So we're not talking small structures.
No, and I haven't had the time, but I do want to go look at them myself because you always like to discover stuff. And if you were going to advise somebody to sort of play and become a detective, is it wisest to look around just the coastlines of places rather than, in the middle?
Well, right, we were focusing deliberately on undersea type of things. I have found surface things. For example, when I was exploring Antarctica, I found something that looks like the ancient structures that they found in South Africa that are supposed to be about 75,000 years old. The structure is very, very similar. That was found by using Google Earth, and we were, you know, not going underwater. So I don't want anybody to think that, you know, these discoveries are only made that way. You can use Google Earth, and you can take a better look at some of those South African structures. You can take Google Earth, and there's an icon at the very top of the Google Earth page, and I think it's Saturn. You can tap on that, and you can switch and start searching Mars. And, you know, you can find many things on the surface there. We found entrances into it. We found things that look like contemporary structures, not just ancient things, that look like, what do they call them, biospheres. And, in fact, one of the articles that I did shows the work of a man who specializes in creating biospheres that are for, you know, the future, supposedly. Well, I put one of his illustrations right next to something I found with Google Earth on Mars, and there's quite a bit of a similarity, which indicates to me that we're already there.
Oh, I would say so. And you just led into the entrance hole into Mars Cavern, which I think is phenomenal. It's a 115-foot wide hole on Mars, and is this one of the NASA's photos?
There's satellite imagery that, you know, NASA's the only one that can do these kind of things. But you can, that's where the original imagery comes from.
It looks like an eye.
I don't know what you're looking at right now, because I've put so many of these up from Mars. Actually, there's been quite a bit to describe.
It's the entrance hole to Mars Cavern.
Now that is not a man-made structure, though it appears to be an entrance into the interior of the planet. We've found other structures that clearly are man-made in the more traditional sense, where you have almost, you know what a doorway looks like with the lintel and the post look that way, except they're enormous. I mean, they're like thousands of feet sometimes in height. And they clearly go into the planet, and we found a number of these. It's not just one. And I should tie this together. There was an article not too long ago. I don't know if I can even find it for you, if it's still up on that page or not. Yeah, I can find it. There is a man who headed up Israel's security space program for quite a long time, from 1981 to 2010. And after he retired, he went public, and the Jerusalem Post and then other newspapers published his I call it his confession, and that was in December 8th, 2020, so you can find that in the Jerusalem Post. I have several short paragraphs from that article, but I'll just give you a couple things. He said, referring to the aliens, they have been waiting for humanity to evolve and reach a stage where we will generally understand what space and spaceships are. There's an agreement between the U.S. government and the aliens. All right, so that's a little part of it. Another quote, there's an underground base in the depths of Mars where they're, referring to the ETs, where their representatives are and also our American astronauts. So when you see, using Google Earth on Mars, and you find things that look like more contemporary structures, and you put this together with a statement from somebody who has wonderful credentials. I mean, to be the head of Israel's security space program for, you know, God, almost 30 years, I guess. That's no small thing. That's not somebody you just blow away as some cook pot. And again, I've got the important part in the article, but I do have it with the date with the Jerusalem Post, December 8th, 2020. So if anybody wants to go back to an original source, they can.
That's what I love about your website. You're so meticulous. There is an authenticity and a nobility to how you put these things up, so that you know you can't play I doubt it with the stuff you put up there, because it doesn't go up unless it's well documented. And I love that about you. It's probably the only place that I know of where if something is on it, it's been fully documented. And you can't say that about newspapers.
To the best of my ability.
Yeah.
Yeah. That we all have our limitations. But to the best of my ability, I try to do that. And that's just because at one portion of my career in the past, I worked for newspapers, and it was good training.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you just don't. You don't find your kind of professionalism any place that I have noticed of late. And I'm sure there are people and reporters out there that are as meticulous as you are, but your website is the only place where I know for sure that if it's up here, you have researched it to the best of your ability. And, you know, I may not, you know, agree totally sometimes with your interpretation, but I do know that whatever picture you put up there has been authenticated, and it's not, you know, something that's been photoshopped or anything. But
we just put up, and this shows how when I'm working on stories, the stories can change and evolve. And this is one that's it's got to be at the very top now. And the title is Mystery at the Edge of the Moon's Dark Side. And it's photo, which I can't even really describe. There are these clusters of, I mean, obviously they're not small, but when you see the picture, they look like a whole bunch of little round clusters of dots. And, of course, you know, compared to the moon, you know they aren't small. And so I was just running with that story when I started. It comes from a book by Charles Byrne, and it was his job with NASA to find landing spots for the moon projects, so that they would not only have a safe place to land, but also a place that might offer scientific intrigue or, you know, possible interesting discoveries. And so that picture was his, and I'm going off trying to imagine what these little dot clusters might be, and I was starting to write it, you know, with possible explanations for these. Then I went a step further, and it got much more interesting because he mentioned that after the lunar orbiter missions ended in 2001, and there were five of those missions, that some of those photos were posted on a website called Lunar Planetary Institute. So I took the next step. I went to that site. I started investigating the photos that I finally found. They don't make it real easy to find this stuff. And I found the same kind of dot clusters, except these weren't on the moon. They were just to the side of the moon. So they were in space. And they looked so similar to the ones that appeared to be on the moon. And I'm going, well, gee, maybe these were just clusters in space going past the moon. And so you just get, you know, you just get deeper and deeper into it. So I went from thinking that these were some kind of an oddity on the moon, but when I took another step, I found out it was something quite different.
Very fascinating. I mean, they look, I mean, I thought when I saw them that it was mold. It almost looks like mold.
Well, it kind of does look that way. I've been trying to find, You know, because, I mean, obviously I have photos on the website, but when you talk on the radio, you go, okay, how in the world do you describe these? And I really haven't come up with a description of these things. And, you know, mold, I guess, might be part of the answer. I don't know. But each of those little dots is...
Yeah, the fact is that, you know, then you see them out in space stringing, you know, and they're still stringing in the same shape that they were when they looked to be on the face of the moon, but now they're out in space.
Right.
And,
makes you wonder. Plus, I've got a third photo that's on the page, and again, there's no way I can describe this. Photo frame 5019 is the one that looks sort of like our algae in space.
Uh-huh.
And in the very next photo, they all change their, they reorganize from one picture to the next. They reorganize. And I just go, okay, what in the world? What's going on here? And I don't have an answer. And I think this will be intriguing to anybody who looks at it.
I think it will be fascinating to see. I mean, I can well imagine what conspiracy theorists are going to say. They don't look as though they were crafts as much. I'd love to see them blown up. I can't make them that big on my computer, but I would love if anyone who listens to this and who goes to this page, you know, send Mary what you think these figures are, because they're phenomenal, and you can get to Mary through her website and just, you know, mention you heard her describing this on the show and you have an idea or an inspiration or in whatever.
All I can think of myself is that these are a traveling community of like a space colony.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Do not know.
What was that? Science fiction, Battlestar Galactica, was that it?
I don't know. Believe it or not, as much as I do this stuff, I'm not totally up on science fiction movies. I should be, but I'm not.
Okay, this was a TV series, and it was Battlestar Galactica, I believe, and all of humanity was on a whole bunch of ships, all sorts of sizes, shapes, and forms that had escaped the destruction of Earth.
Hmm.
And it was their journey through space looking for home again. And, and they were in clusters just like this.
Wow.
They were clustered like that in space. It was a good series. I enjoyed it. You know,
well,
and I won't
if they have
spoil
clusters
it for anybody.
Like this, I may have to watch this.
Well, you know, it's really funny because they left their home planet, and you know, I'll ruin the whole thing for you. Spoiler alert!
Well, I hope
alert.
Netflix or somebody like that has it so I can see it.
Well, they did many seasons, and the final season they did actually find a planet that they could land on, and that they could all, you know, gather on, and that they could, and it turns out that the planet they left wasn't Earth, but the planet they found after many seasons was Earth, and they were the original populated this planet.
Hmm. There were a whole bunch of years in my life when I was in college, and, you know, when I was working, that I just did not watch a whole lot of TV, and thanks to COVID, I've caught up on many of the things I never saw before, but
actually,
I haven't caught up on that one.
No, that one was spectacular. The other really spectacular picture you had, and let's go back to Mars, was that UFO that skidded to a stop on Mars. Now, that was an impressive picture of an object that appears to have, you know, skidded almost a mile across the surface of Mars.
Right, and this was another one where I found it with Google Earth, and the tools for measurement really, again, help, because you begin to realize the enormity of what you're seeing, because, you know, when you see it in terms of the whole planet, you could just maybe bypass it. Then you zoom in and you go, oh, my goodness. And there is what I clearly feel is a long skid mark, And when I measured it, it was 4,422 feet long. Now, that's a pretty good skid. And the vehicle itself is, and again, this is slightly approximation because, anyhow, it's 406 feet long and 367 feet across. And it looks like it comes to a dead end when it runs into too much, I don't know, earth or whatever you call earth on Mars, dirt.
Dirt. and Mary does also give the latitude and longitude. So, and as she said before, cut and paste it and put it into Google Mars, because that way, you know, you will definitely get the same picture she got, hopefully. It's I can't imagine what else it could be. If it had been an asteroid or a comet, it wouldn't have had that kind of shape.
No, it wouldn't. And you wouldn't have, you can see where, I'm going to say the earth or where the dirt is, you can see where it seems to have smashed into it, like it finally came to an end and it even pushed up the dirt in front of it. I mean, it truly looks that way.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
You're in the section right now, that, let's see, you're in global links, you're in the current things. It's the things from 2020 to 2021. And so just skimming through that section, there's a whole lot of things that will just kind of blow your mind. And if you scroll down from that, we get into the things you and I talked about before with the underground structures. And then there's something that I did not get with Google Earth, but I'll give a plug to another website or YouTube channel. And they have a series called Mars Ruins Explain This. And this particular channel, I don't know how they pronounce it. It looks like Oasis on the Fly. It's O-A-S-I-C-E, Oasis on the Fly. And for about a year now, maybe every week or so, they will post about a five-minute segment of video images that the satellites on Mars have picked up, and they go real slowly. And most of the time when they see structures, you kind of go, okay, maybe that's something. It's a little bit sometimes like looking at clouds and seeing shapes. But they found this one that truly looks like the top and the side of a doorway or a window or something made out of cement, or, you know, it doesn't look, it's ancient, it looks broken, but it's not something where you have to bring a lot of imagination to it to see. It looks like maybe something fell off a structure in Greece from one of the old Greek ruins. And I found that very fascinating. So that's another thing in that same section. You can keep scrolling down. It's the global links. And then beneath that is one where the ice has been melting in Antarctica, and you can see half of a disc that's now being exposed. And again, I think I did it. I should have. Yeah, I've got the coordinates there, so you can find it again for yourself. And it's just, there's just so much to see. There's a lot going on, and if anybody gets bored, just start exploring some of these things. It will keep you going for a while.
Oh, geez, yeah. And, you know, especially, you know, I'm fascinated with Antarctica. So there's even a lake there that they can't explain how it stays not frozen. I mean, I can explain it. It has to have something to do with heat from below. But,
no, there's another possible. Well, that's true. I'm not really arguing with you on that. But there are more volcanoes, I think, than concentrated there on the west coast of Antarctica than I believe any other place in the world. So volcanic activity can be heating all this stuff up also.
That would be interesting. I know. Have they done any ground penetrating radar at all there? I mean, they can LIDAR. They can do that from a drone. I think.
I don't have anything that I have personally run into. The LIDAR is incredible what it can do, whether somebody's done that in Antarctica, and whether it's available for any of us to see, I do not know.
Well, the LIDAR would just take off the surface stuff. It wouldn't really go beneath the surface, or does it? I know it takes off the surface stuff.
It takes off the surface stuff. How deep it goes, I'm not sure. We are doing a story. Oh, when is this going to be posted? Trying to find my stuff. I have worked on one with the discoveries with the LIDAR that we'll be posting. Oh, geez. Don't even know if I can pull it up for you. I can't. Anyhow, LIDAR discoveries will be coming up shortly.
Oh. Well, I know that you know, in so many instances, especially with unexplainable things going on, like there's the Skinwalker Ranch and then there's the Blind Frog Ranch, both of them are using ground-penetrating LIDAR, radar, to see what's underneath the ground, what's going on, what could possibly be creating some of the manifestations of unusual events that are on the surface. And, you know, you do begin to – and I'm wondering here again, if you used LIDAR over the water, would it be able to get to the bottom of the ocean?
I don't know. But I can. I was looking on my computer to tell you about what we're going to be doing next week. I did find my printout copy of it, and the title is going to be "At Least 27 New." And those are in quotation marks. At least 27 new ancient Mayan ruins have been found, and there is a professor from the University of Arizona who's been using that technology, and he's discovered just ancient cities. I mean, quite remarkable. And I've got three different of those images of three different sites. And so sometime probably about a week from now, it'll be on the website.
Is this in the northern part of South America or the southern part?
He's got one from Mexico, one from Guatemala, one from Belize.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not saying that's the extent of what he's done. Those are the ones that I am posting.
I know they've got a lot of area there that that has been undocumented, and they've been using the LIDAR to find these towns and villages, and in some cases they've found little temples and stuff like that, and when they've done the LIDAR, they've realized that it's not isolated, it's part of a huge complex
right.
that hasn't been uncovered, and it looks fascinating, and you start to you begin to wonder about how vast and amazing the cultures were that were down there. And one of the reasons, not all, but one of the reasons we find so much antiquity in South America is that it never had, because of the shifts of the poles and the different locations that the North Pole had, the glacier and the ice cap never reached South America. So South America was never put into an ice age. It was, you know, functional throughout all time. It never had that. Well, let's rest for 100,000 years in the ice. It had a constant population of some sort that was ongoing.
Interesting.
Yeah,
so
that
we
was
had
cool
everything free. We had everything freeze over in the South Pole and the North Pole and the Upper Hemisphere. And
actually, not the South Pole. The South Pole.
The South Pole. They've done no. Hold on. They've had. I don't know how to explain it, but they have found ancient forest remnants in Antarctica. So there's ice now that wasn't there before.
One of the pole shifts put Antarctica almost into the temperate zone for a period of time. They had They had weather like we have here in the South. And then, of course, it switched back. It was
right.
a plate and shift and a pole shift.
No argument. That's probably very correct. But I just think it's fascinating that when they get... There was, I think, some professors from the university, I think it was Wisconsin. We did a story on it. I don't know how to quickly find things. And it's like moss. It's like ferns. It's like things that would only grow in a very warm climate.
Mm-hmm. I'll send you a link to the book that goes about the, it's a short book, but it talks about the pole shifts and how the climate changed. And the only place where the climate never really hit an ice age was South America. And that's where we have the oldest antiquities.
Now, what about South Africa?
Well, that's probably the same. You know,
I
don't really know, but I had this man on the I interviewed him last week, I think, and what was the name of his book? Before Atlantis, with Mark Carlotto, and he's talks about the plate shift and the pole shift and what happened to the cultures when that happened. It was really an interesting book.
Well, the reason I was bringing up South Africa is because that's supposed to be at least 75,000 years old, and you can still see the, remnants or the base structure of where all these things were.
Absolutely.
But obviously the things in South America are, much more, three-dimensional than just a footprint of something. And when I went to the Yucatan and, even flying in, you could see perhaps the top of, there would be pyramid-shaped just greenery sticking up out of nowhere, and you'd see it in all directions. None of it had been ever excavated. And even at that point, which is quite a few years ago now, I thought, there must be a whole lot more, civilization under these jungles than we know. Because that was just too peculiar to see these different, peak shapes coming out of the forest.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's so much history yet to be uncovered. It's so very exciting.
Oh, my goodness, yes. Perhaps, and, we're getting the tools now to do it, like the LIDAR. It's a wonderful instrument. We did an article a long time ago based on the book, I think it's something about the monkey kingdom or temple of the monkey god, and they used that title might not be exactly right, but they used LIDAR and they discovered this whole, vast structure or structures that they never would have found any other way.
Well, it's really lucky for us in a way that those things have been hidden for so long, because maybe we won't destroy important stuff the way we have in the past when we've discovered antiquity.
We can keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah, mine are all crossed. We're out of time, I'm sorry to say, but this has been such a pleasure again, and I want to thank you so much for taking the time to spend with the audience and me, because you bring forth so much fascinating stuff, and I want everybody to check out your website, and that's skyshipsovercashiers.com.
And if people can't remember how to spell cashiers, if you type in skyships over, you'll probably find it. But Cashiers is a town in North Carolina, but it's spelled just like a cashier at the grocery store.
Fair enough. And do check it out, because it is a fascinating place to go to, and the material is incredible. And as I said, absolutely meticulously, as best she can, authenticated. So thank you again, Mary. This has been such
thank
a lovely hour.
Thank you. I enjoyed talking to you.
It always goes too fast. Thank you again. And good
Take
night
care.
Now.
Bye-bye.
Okay, everybody. Thanks for sharing your time with us. Do make sure that you follow us on YouTube and on Rumble, and we will be back again next week. And Mary will be back again next month. And if you check out the website, barbaradelong.com, you'll be able to exactly know when she's going to be back. And mark your calendar, because she always has wonderful material. Good night now.